Before we cue the saxophone, it should be noted that the information conveyed in this podcast should not be construed to be tax advice specifically to you, the listener, as every taxpayer has a unique situation. Thus, what may benefit someone else's tax situation may not help you, or worse, could be detrimental. Therefore, do not act on any strategies discussed or implied by this podcast without first consulting with a tax professional.
There is no such thing as too much saxophone, am I right? Hello, world. Welcome to the inaugural podcast of a laid-back, business-casual show that we like to call Taxes and Beer. Taxes because they affect everyone, and beer because, well, it makes everything a little more interesting. My name is Justin Kern, and I'm joined by my friend and founder of Dark Horse CPAs, Chase Berkey. And we're going to record these episodes in a variety of different places. Some in his office, some at my house, some on the go. So you may hear a dog or two in the background, but it doesn't matter because we wanted to make sure to get you some pretty valuable information on some pretty cool topics. We both love beer and we loathe taxes. But regarding the former, it looks like you've got a delicious Belgian beer over there, Chase. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right. This right here is the St. Bernardus Christmas Ale, a truly festive beer for this time of year. It's a dark beer that drinks quite a bit lighter and sweeter than you'd imagine. So without further ado, let me pour myself a drink.
By the way, everybody, it's 9:30 in the morning.
It's $5 somewhere. Ah, yes. So this beer actually confuses and surprises a lot of people. It's dark, like it's a porter or a stout, yet it drinks very light. It's actually kind of sweet even. And if you didn't see the color, you'd almost think you were drinking some sort of blonde ale or something. And also, it's 10% alcohol by volume to boot. So that's always a plus. One of the interesting things actually about this beer is that it's the Christmas version of the Abbott 12. And the Abbott 12 is a beer that goes back to 1838, which was originally brewed by the Westvleteren Monastery. They actually now have had the highest rated beer in the world on and off for a couple of years. And it's their Belgian quad that they make that's so popular. But St. Bernardus actually has the original recipe because they have the old yeast strain that was used back in 1838. So one of the cool things there is that, you know, when you're drinking this beer, you're really drinking history because that yeast strain is almost 200 years old. And that's, you know, one of the unique things about Belgian beer is that their yeast strains are actually kind of their source code, you know, it's their DNA. And, you know, without it, you cannot replicate the beer, come anywhere close, actually. So one of the savvy things that the monks have done is they've actually because they have to bottle condition these beers, which means they have to put some live yeast in there. So they actually put totally unrelated yeast strands into their beers. So when people tried to extract that yeast and replicate the beer, the product they ended up making was total crap. So it's one of those things where without that source code, you just don't have the beer. So Westvleteren actually now brews their, you know, flagship beer with a totally different strand of yeast. So that's just a little bit of history behind this beer, and it's pretty delicious.
I love that they provide misinformation to anybody trying to replicate it. Just very savvy monks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't underestimate them. They're a lot more savvy than people give them credit for.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chase, for that small and intelligent review. But I wanted to touch on what's going on in today's tax reform. So today is Wednesday, December 20th. There's some major tax legislation that is about to make its way into law. Originally dubbed the Cut, Cut, Cut Bill by President Trump, this bill will result in huge changes to the U.S. tax code.
You're absolutely right, Justin. A funny thing happened in the wee hours this morning. Democrats were actually able to use the Byrd rule to force Republicans to rename the bill from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to, you ready for this, an act to provide for reconciliation pursuant to Titles 2 and 5 of the concurrent resolution on the budget for fiscal year 2018. That's kind of a mouthful. It sort of seems like a nod, quite honestly, to the Derek Zoolander Center for Kids Who Can't Read Good and Want to Learn to Do Other Good Stuff, too. I actually think the Democrats are exercising a sense of humor with this one. Anyway, we've all heard bits and pieces of this bill that Trump has been calling a Christmas gift to the middle class. So you may have heard that the bill isn't all it's cracked up to be for the middle class, but rather is a boon to the wealthy and corporations. One of the things we noticed here at Dark Horse is that there are very few podcasts out there that are diving into the nuts and bolts of what this bill is all about and how it will impact your financial situation in a way that people can actually understand. So we've created this podcast series to tackle these issues in a way that provides as much clarity as possible. So today we want to start out with the impact to individuals, as well as drill down on how these changes will impact homeowners in higher cost areas like San Diego, where we're based out of.
All right, Chase, question. What does this bill actually change?
Well, the short answer is a lot. There are changes everywhere in this tax code, which is really where the, you know, term overhaul is coming from. So for individuals, it's going to do a number of things. It's going to lower tax rates as well as tax brackets. It almost doubles the standard deduction for singles and married couples. For itemized deductions, it does a number of things. It phases certain ones out, eliminates others, caps others. It's just kind of a mix. So one of the biggest points of contention, especially for Californians here, is actually the state and property tax combined limitation. So what that means is that previously you could deduct all of the property taxes you paid and all of the state income taxes you paid against your federal income. Now they're capping the sum of those two items at $10,000. And so you're probably aware, Justin, in California, an $800,000 house is relatively a modest house in most of our cities. And that same modest house is actually going to put you at the cap of that $10,000, which means that your state income taxes give you no incremental benefit at that point.
So the value from a tax standpoint of buying a home now at $1.5, $2 million is there.
It's pretty limited, quite honestly. And there's another item that ties directly into that. Interest on mortgages now is capped to loans of $750,000. And so what that means is that if you go out and buy a house and you get, you know, $1 million loan, the interest that you would allocate to the $250K above 750 is no longer deductible. So that's another area where homeownership is getting diminished in terms of its tax benefits, which consequently, you know, is a major change to the tax code, because homeownership has always been something that's been incentivized. And a big reason, you know, people, you know, start going down that road of buying a home.
Yeah. American dream.
Exactly. So other, you know, changes that are happening to itemized deductions, the medical expense, the floor for deducting that is coming down from 10% of income to 7.5% of income. This essentially means that you'll have less medical expenses needed to qualify for that itemized deduction. And then unreimbursed employee expenses is actually getting totally eliminated for 2018. So these are the expenses that you incur as an employee for your job that your employer does not reimburse. You know, some people have very significant dollar amounts of this specific deduction, and they will no longer be able to deduct that in 2018 and going forward. So outside of itemized deductions, it actually eliminates personal exemptions. It doubles the amount of the child tax credit from $1,000 per child to $2,000 per child, and it greatly increases the income levels that qualify for that credit. So we'll get into this a little bit more. I'm just giving you some of the high-level changes here that have gone on.
Well, that's important. I'm glad that they're encouraging people to have more children.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that part of the tax code stays consistent. So another thing that it does is that it doubles the estate and gift tax exemption to $22.4 million per married couple and half for singles. This is a good one. It repeals the Obamacare tax penalty on those without health insurance. And divorcees may or may not like this one, but alimony payments will no longer be deductible by the person paying the alimony, and it will no longer be taxed by those who receive it.
Wow.
So what that means is that if you're the one receiving the payment, you now get tax-free money. And if you're the person paying it, you get no deduction. So if you already felt like you were getting a raw deal in that divorce, it just got more raw.
Just got a little bit worse.
Yes.
Sorry, divorcees.
Happens. Hey, so for corporations, everyone is probably aware, because this is one of the biggest contention points by Democrats, our corporate tax rate has been lowered to 21% from 35%. So that's a huge decrease. You know, and kind of on a worldwide scale, that puts us about on par with the worldwide average of around 22.5%. Another item is that corporate alternative minimum tax is gone. So that is a huge thing for corporations also, because the alternative minimum tax, whether it's for individuals or for corporations, is basically an alternate tax code that basically says, okay, you're getting too much advantage of the tax code as it is. So we've got to run you through this alternate tax code to make sure that we, you know, find a way to get you to pay taxes. So that's gone for corporations. For individuals, essentially the limits have been increased. So the people who are subject to that are going to be fewer, because you're going to have to make quite a bit more to even get into that alternative tax code. Also for corporations, it will limit interest deductions for corporations, mostly for ones that are just highly levered. You know, by and large, it won't affect too many corporations, and there's certain ways to structure entities to get around that, but that is baked into the tax bill. So it actually changes our current worldwide taxation system to a territorial tax system. This is something that I'd love to dive into further in a future podcast, because this is a pretty major change to multinational companies. And it's going to drastically impact, you know, companies like Apple and Microsoft, who have significant amounts of cash overseas that they will now be motivated to repatriate. So what it's going to do is lower the taxation to 15.5% of repatriated cash and 8% for non-cash assets. And that's compared to the 35% statutory rate that's currently out there. And also it's going to require a minimum of 10.5% tax on future offshore profits, regardless of the taxes paid in those countries. So once again, you know, the idea is that repatriating the cash is not the pain point, because, you know, the goal is to get that money back in the States, which I think most people can agree is a good thing. And then so for pass-through entities, this is an area where I think there's a lot of confusion. So when they talk about a pass-through entity, they're talking about a partnership like an LLC, an S corporation, even a sole proprietorship. So any sort of business that passes its income through to the owners is impacted by this tax legislation. So what the bill says is that pass-through income will be reduced by 20%. What does that mean? That means if your K-1 says that you have $100,000 in income, you're only going to be taxed on $80,000. Now, there are some limitations on that, and it's somewhat industry specific in terms of who can and can't get benefited under that. But we will definitely center in on that on a future podcast, because that's going to have major implications for how people structure their compensation, whether that's becoming an independent contractor in their current company. There's just a lot of moving parts in this whole thing that people are definitely going to have to be wise to, because there's going to be significant tax savings there.
Well, that's why you're here.
Exactly.
To share with us all this incredible info. So my brain's spinning right now. I got a lot of things on my mind. We broke this down into the three categories, right? You started with individuals, you talked about corporations, and then also pass-through entities. But let's take a step back there. I'd love to talk more about the individuals. And I want to understand, how much are the tax brackets for those individuals decreasing?
Right. So rates are actually going to decrease by about 1-4%. Per tax bracket. And those income brackets are lowering slightly, nothing significant. It's more about the rates that are changing. So a quick example is that taxable income of 150K, which will be defined differently because of all the changes that have happened, is actually going to result in a $4,100 reduction in tax as compared to the old regime. So like I said, that 150K is not going to necessarily be comparable, because how that number is derived has totally changed.
All right. So in the beginning of the podcast, you had mentioned standard deductions versus itemized deductions. Can we start with standard deductions? Break it down for us. Give us what we need to know with this new tax plan.
Absolutely. So really, when you're talking about deductions, when people talk about write-offs, a lot of times they are talking about itemized deductions. So really what happens here is you either itemize your deductions or you take what's called a standard deduction. And a standard deduction is just a flat rate of deduction that you get from your income to arrive at your taxable income. And so under the previous regime, that was about $12,000 for married taxpayers and about $6,000 for single. This is now being doubled. So regardless of whether you own a home, regardless of whether you pay income taxes or property taxes, regardless of whether you donate to charity, you get this deduction as kind of your minimum deduction. You only itemize if you go above it. So now that we're talking about a standard deduction as high as $24,000, there's not going to be a lot of people itemizing. In fact, current estimates are that below 10% of taxpayers will continue to itemize in 2018 and going forward.
Well, so that's a good thing, right? I mean, doubling standard deductions is a great thing for the average taxpayer.
For a lot of people, it will be. What it really does is kind of change the balance of power here, because like I said earlier, you know, a lot of homeowners got into that position to have a tax advantage. Those homes no longer carry that same weight because of the standard deduction and because of some of the caps that are being imposed on, you know, the tax deductibility of those home items. So I think a lot of fear, at least in California specifically, is that if home ownership is less attractive from a tax standpoint, what does that do for the value of that home?
Absolutely. All right. So what's the deal with the home mortgage interest? They're saying that it's limited to loans of, or limited to loans below 750K. So if a mortgage is above 750K, is the entire interest deduction thrown out the window?
No, that's actually a misconception, thankfully. So there's a couple things kind of going on with this bill. One is that if you have a pre-existing mortgage, the 750K limitation doesn't apply. This applies for new home purchases, which they just recently said would be for anything that happened after the middle of December of 2017. So what it really means is that if you go out and get a mortgage of $1 million, there's a portion of it, one quarter of it, what's above 750K, that will have interest that is not deductible. So that means that about a fourth of the interest that you'd pay on that $1 million loan will not be a tax deduction. It doesn't mean that the entire mortgage interest paid is thrown out the window.
And is that deduction, or I should say the lack thereof, that deduction, is that expanded over the life of the loan? So now you've got a loan amount, it's $1 million, right? You've got interest payment on that $1 million, but every year for the life of the loan, you're actually reducing the amount of taxable deductions by, in this case, 25%.
So no, the good news there is that once that loan balance actually gets below 750, then you no longer have to worry about that.
Got it.
So, you know, a planning point for some may be to pay down those loans to 750 so they can get out of that. You know, a trap that people may find themselves in, at least the way that the bill is currently written, is that if they have a pre-existing mortgage that they refinance from here on out, they're going to be under that 750 cap. So you don't want to refi without, you know, considering the kind of the tax disadvantages that you'll get. So you might get a lower interest rate, but if you're deducting less, you just got to run through the numbers to see if it makes sense.
Got it. All right, let's move on to some itemized deduction questions. What were the other two changes you mentioned to the itemized deductions on the new tax plan?
So the changes to itemized deductions that are kind of outside of the realm of the home are twofold. One is the medical expense floor is being reduced from 10% to 7.5%. And what does that mean? That means that under the current regime, you had to make, if you had $100,000 in income, you had to have over $10,000 in expenses to deduct any of it. So if you had $12,000 in medical expenses in a given year, that means you're only deducting $2,000 because that's the amount that exceeds 10K. Mm-hmm. That's not a very big deduction. And quite honestly, you know, it's kind of a high floor. So what they've done in this tax bill is they've reduced that to 7.5%. So in that same example, making 100K, you spend 12K on medical expenses. Instead of deducting 2,000, you'd actually be deducting, you know, $4,500 there.
Got it.
So, you know, that's going to be a benefit for quite a few. And clearly there's an inherent, you know, planning strategy to move those expenses into 2018, because that's when those changes take effect.
And the unreimbursement for the employees' expenses outside of, or yeah, their business expenses, I should say.
Right. So these are, you know, the costs of, you know, items that you pay for in the normal course of business that the employer doesn't reimburse. You know, this is mileage to clients. This is supplies. This is, you know, just anything that, you know, you need for your business that your employer doesn't have a policy to reimburse. So, you know, the planning point here is that because this deduction is going away in 2018, you should pay any of those expenses that you know you'll have to incur anyways, pay them in 2017 before the year ends.
In the next 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yes.
No rush, right?
No rush. All right. So I think I have a handle on the itemized deduction changes, but you had mentioned that the new plan eliminates personal exemptions.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yes. So personal exemption is basically a deduction you get for being a human being. Your dog doesn't get it, but you get it. So if you have a household of you, your wife, and two kids, that's four people and four personal exemptions. And so each of those personal exemptions is currently worth about $4,000. So that means that you get to deduct in a four-person family about $16,000 from your taxable income before you actually arrive at what you get taxed on. So that obviously is an advantage, right? But the new tax bill actually does away with that. So in that same example, there is no $16,000 deduction, which sounds bad, but yeah, there are some, you know, some compensating things that have been baked in there that will make people for the most part come out about even, just depending on the situation though.
Yeah, because it does sound like if you have a large family, this is actually going to be a pretty big hit.
Yeah, well, you would think that, except for the fact that the child tax credit got doubled. So previously, you used to get up to $1,000 per child, but the problem was that was capped at pretty low income levels. In fact, if you were married, filing jointly, if you made over 110, that thing was getting phased out. And most people, you know, at least in California, were pretty much totally phased out of that credit. So they didn't really get to see much of it. What this new credit is going to do is double that 1,000 to 2,000 and increase the phase out level to a level that's almost four times what it currently is. So this is going to mean that, you know, 99.5% of taxpayers will get the full child tax credit of 2K for each child. So even though they're not getting the deduction of the personal exemption, they're getting a tax credit of $2,000 per child. So a lot of times this is going to, you know, wash out or, you know, be in the benefit of the family under the new regime.
Yeah, it sounds like I need to start popping out some kids. I think that's what you're trying to tell me here.
I've been telling you that for a while.
Yeah. So did I hear you say that the tax penalty, switching gears a little bit away from the family, but back to the individual, they're doing away with the tax penalty for not maintaining your health insurance, which I know is a big piece of the Obamacare Act.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this was something that was not fun to explain to people for a couple of years. This is something that really was a thorn in people's side, because what it did was, if you didn't have adequate health insurance for the entire year, you got a tax penalty that was based on a percentage of your income for every month you didn't have it. Anyone who paid it is probably painfully aware of that. Anyone who didn't, you know, thank your lucky stars, right? So the good news here is that that penalty is going away. It essentially is putting the decision back in the hands of the taxpayer and not penalizing them for making that decision.
Great. Well, how about this? Give us some examples of how it all comes together, because look, we talk about people that make over 150 or 200 or that family. The average individual doesn't fall into a lot of those categories. So break it down for us. Give us something that is, you know, palpable for the average guy working at Chili's, you know, in the Midwest. What's the impact to them?
So that's a really great question, quite honestly. And that actually is going to yield an accountant's favorite response. It depends. You know, this is especially true with this one, since there's so many moving parts that have fundamentally changed. But let me provide two examples that hopefully can provide and shed a little bit of light on this and make it a little more digestible. The first is going to be a married couple who are W-2 wage earners and earn a combined $150,000, own a home in an expensive metropolitan area that has their own state income taxes, could be talking about San Diego here, and have two kids. And the second example is going to be a single millennial who freeloads with his parents and makes $45K working overtime at Chili's. You know, he's really hustling these tables. You know, he's doing some big
super
things.
Super hustler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great guy. So under the old tax code, the middle class married couple was able to deduct $30,000 in mortgage interest, $8,000 in state income taxes, $12,000 in property taxes, and $5,000 in charitable giving. So these are, you know, hypothetical numbers to illustrate the example. But if you don't believe that you would pay $12,000 in property taxes, I've got a lot of tax returns I could show you that would tell you otherwise. And the $30,000 mortgage interest, that's not even on the high end. Anyhow, this reduced their taxable income to $95,000 after all of these itemized deductions we just discussed. So after the exemptions for themselves and their kids, you know, $16,000 because it's a tax household of four people, their taxable income was actually $79,000 under the old regime. So this would have resulted in a tax bill of $11,184. So under the new regime, the $8,000 in state income tax and the $12,000 in property taxes is capped at $10,000. So instead of taking a $20,000 deduction there, they're taking a $10,000. And so this is an area where people in California and other high tax states, you know, are really feeling the pain there. But the fortunate thing that is that in this case, their mortgage is pre-existing. So even though it's maybe above $750K balance, they're not being capped on any of their mortgage interest. So in this scenario, the result of the taxable income is essentially $105K, which is similar to what it was before, except for 10,000 of their deductions got capped by the state and local income tax deduction we talked about. So one would think that this is going to set you up for a much higher tax bill, especially since they don't have those personal exemptions, because, you know, instead of being taxed on 79K like they were previously, they're actually getting taxed on $105,000.
Hmm.
But one of the things we also talked about was that these tax brackets and tax rates have lowered. So the tax bill would have been $14,434. But because of those child tax credits, $4,000 of that gets paid by the government. So their tax bill ends up being $10,434, which is a whopping savings of $750 from the previous tax regime. So a slight tax benefit. I wouldn't necessarily call it a Christmas present or, you know, any sort of windfall, but it is something.
Savings are savings.
Right. So let's go to the millennial. The millennial doesn't itemize because his itemized deductions are below the current standard deduction. His situation is pretty simple. His taxable income after the standard deduction and personal exemption is $34,600 on wages of $45K. His tax on that income was $4,728. So under the new regime, his taxable income would actually be $32,800 thanks to the higher standard deduction, which would be offset by the loss of his personal exemption. So his income tax under the new regime is actually going to be $3,746, which for him is going to be a savings of $982. So obviously, $982 to someone who's making $45K is a much bigger difference than $750 to someone who's making $150K. So, you know, this is kind of where that balance of power has somewhat changed because this millennial, you know, kind of freeloading with his parents, you know, not having any itemized deductions, he actually, you know, is in a more advantageous tax position comparatively than his neighbors, you know, who have a family and own a home.
Wow. So, I mean, a lot of data here. And I would imagine that some of the guys listening in are unsure of what the next step is in their own sort of comparative situations. Okay, yes, thanks for the examples, but how does this impact me? And everybody's probably in a slightly different situation. So what would you suggest those people do?
Well, you need to ask your CPA. You know, if you don't have a CPA, you should send us an email, info@darkhorsecpa.com or visit our website, darkhorsecpa.com, and we will provide a complimentary assessment of how these changes will impact your taxes. And you know, the beauty of it is that if you are in a position where you have a significant savings heading your way in 2018, you don't have to wait until 2019 to realize that. You can actually lower your withholdings in 2018, get that money, you know, when you earn it. And then, you know, when you file your tax return in 2019, you'll still be okay.
Great. Well, look, there's 2 weeks left in 2017. We're at the end of the year. What are some immediate items that you are telling your clients to do before the year ends?
So from a high level, kind of most of these recommendations are going to be to push forward itemized deductions into 2017. So one of the biggest things is to prepay your property taxes. This is something that you wouldn't be able to do if you have an impound account on your mortgage, which means that they just take it out of each payment and then they remit it on their own schedule. But for taxpayers who are actually paying their counties, you know, themselves, you know, if you have something that you would normally pay in February or March of 2018, pay that in December. Why? Because, you know, as we talked about earlier, the property tax and state income tax deductions are combined and capped at 10K. So you should definitely take that in 2017 where it's going to give you the most benefit. So as many property tax payments as you can batch into 2017, do it for sure.
Wow.
Another thing would be to make any estimated tax payments for your state income tax that are related to 2017 or possibly even 2018, make those payments by the end of this year. And that's because, once again, as a taxpayer, it's based on when you pay for the deduction, not on what year it relates to. So if you pay that in 2017, you're going to be deducting that against your federal income taxes in 2017. And if it generates a refund, then you know that's going to be taxable in 2018, which hopefully you're in a position where your tax rates are lower and that is actually less of a hit in 2018. Another thing that we're advising our clients on is, you know, if you're kind of at that, you know, $24,000 range for your itemized deductions, you know, really what's about to happen is that the standard deduction is going to come in and say, well, you're not really getting any benefit for these deductions because you get the standard deduction anyways. So if you're kind of at that threshold, what we're advising clients to do is if you want to do your charitable giving, do that in 2017, because that's when you're actually going to realize the benefit of doing so. You know, and some people aren't going to maybe want to just drop a windfall on a charitable organization. There's actually ways to set up donor advised funds, which allow you to take the year or the deduction in the year that you fund it, and then, you know, kind of parse out the funding to the charity kind of at your discretion. So there's some items there where, you know, when the deduction isn't going to make a difference in 2018, push it forward to 2017. Or another thing you can do is make a mortgage payment early. So if you were going to pay it in, you know, the beginning part of January, pay it in December. And that's going to increase your mortgage interest for 2017. And that's kind of along the same thought as, you know, if you're kind of at that precipice where you're around 24,000 anyways, you might as well take it in 2017 where it benefits you and not in 2018 where it is a wash.
Mm-hmm.
Another item that we're talking about is, you know, don't worry about paying your mortgage down to 750K. If it's pre-existing, once again, it's not subject to that cap because it's pre-existing. But on the same token, if you refinance that mortgage, then, you know, you have a whole host of issues. So really being smart about, you know, what you do with your mortgage is going to be important for 2017 and going forward.
We'd like to thank you for joining us on this podcast and encourage you to subscribe to stay current on tax issues that affect your bottom line. Please note that every individual taxpayer situation is completely unique and that you would need to consult with a tax professional prior to making any tax moves advocated or implied by this podcast. To that end, if you have any questions about any of the topics discussed on this podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at info@darkhorsecpa.com. For content beyond the podcast, including how to become a client, please visit us at our website at darkhorsecpa.com and follow us on Instagram using the handle darkhorsecpa.